He was a famous trumpet man from out Chicago way. He had a boogie style that no one else could play. He was a top man at his craft. But then his number came up and he was gone with a draft. He's in the army now, a blowing reveille. He's a boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. They made him blow a bugle for his Uncle Sam. It really brought him down because he couldn't jam. The captain seemed to understand. Because the next day the cap went out and drafted a band. And now the company jumps when he plays reveille. He's a boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. A toot, a toot.
And you are listening to
Radio Free Cybertron.
It's true. And coming up on the show in this edition of RSC, I had to catch myself there. I almost said this week. But RSC has been anything but weekly lately, unless you mean weekly as in the adjective delicate in constitution, frail, or sickly. And then we've been plenty weekly. But that's beside the point. Coming up on this edition of RSC, we have lots of reviews in varying sound quality. Duo Maxwell from ATT sent us a review of some Macross toy thing. It transforms. It's a good review, too. But, you know, I'm fairly ignorant of Macross, as I am in basically everything else. Also, Goldimus Prime reviews Hightower, the Robots in Disguise build team component. And Chris McFeely rounds off the show with a review of the Voltagus slash Ruination slash Urination knockoff. And I go over Cybertronian, the unofficial Transformers Recognition Guide, Volumes 2 and 3. And really, that's it. I'm basically saving all the Radio Free Cybertron goodness that my pores can excrete. It's a wonderful image there. For you and for the Radio Free Cybertron anniversary show, which will be sometime around November 25th, I'll say. And this will probably be the last broadcast until that point. But to get things started off, we're going to go to Goldimus Prime with his review of Hightower.
All right, that is it. Jettison the Insecticons. You guys have got to lay off those hostess fruit pies.
This is Goldimus Prime. I'm reviewing Hightower this week. Boy, been quite a few weeks since I was here last. And probably even more since I reviewed something. What was that show I hosted? That was probably the last thing I did for RFC before now. So I got Hightower on the what was it there, Sunday 28th, and you know I had like $8 in my pocket, and when I walked into Walmart, of course I find the entire build team sitting there along with the bullet trains. Oh boy, I told my father I think I'm going to cry. So he bought me Hightower out of pity. Well, not really. He's just generous like that. And then I used the $8 I had to put the other guys on layaway. Hopefully I can scrape together some cash to get them out of there before December 14th, which is when they go back to stock, when layaway closes for Christmas. Okay, why won't this... Oh. Sorry, I'm transforming Hightower back to vehicle mode so I can get the measurements of him while I'm talking here, since I forgot to do that earlier. Well, I know I'll at least be able to get the build team out Team Bullet Train's going to be contingent on me getting some of my holiday money by, like, December 10th, so I can have time to cash checks. Alright, excuse me while I get a drink of water here. My throat's drying out on me. Refreshing. Now, Hightower is a crane. You know, it's the weirdest thing, too. All last night, I've been trying to call Hightower Heavy Load. And I don't know why. I'm moving on now. Hightower is almost completely red. He's got clear windows in his cab, and a different shade of red on his crane arm. He's got some parts that are painted silver, mostly detailing on the side is front grille slash bumper. Not sure what that's really supposed to be. Oh, neat, there's a little ladder on one side. Okay. Hightower also has some black on him for tires and the robot feet hanging off the back of him. Hightower is, about 4 inches long. I'm counting the width of the folded robot feet on his back. And then he's, 2 7/10 inches wide? I'll just say 2 3/4 inches. And at the top of his cab, he's, 2 1/2 inches tall. And his crane can point up, making him 5 1/2 inches tall. The crane's mobility seems to be a formality. The base of the crane is the only part that moves right now, with just a simple hinge. The hook, while it can move, it brings the gun barrel out. And the hook is pretty useless anyway, since it's molded, sealed closed with a bit of plastic. I wonder how much loss of stability there would be if I cut that out of there. I don't think I want to do that again. The last time I tried to do something like that, I cut my finger open. Blood everywhere. So, there's a third mode you can do here. Flip out the gun barrel and point it straight forward, and you got a little gun truck thing here. You can also pop the crane out of the cab, and there's a hole on the thing in front of the cab that you can plug the gun into that might have been put there for landfill mode. I haven't found out why that's there yet. And then you can have the gun barrel be able to rotate. What other neat little gun stuff did I find for him? Nothing I can think of at the moment. So I guess we'll go straight to transformation to Hightower. I mean, transformation to robot mode. This is Hightower. Start by taking off the cab. Yep, cab has to come off to transform. Okay, fold out the robot feet, which are pretty tight, actually. But that's good, since Build King, his components, from what I've heard, have had loose joints. So Hasbro seems to have tightened these specifically for landfill mode, since the loose joints made the combiner very floppy. Fold the front fenders up to make the shoulders, and then unfold the forearms from underneath and pull the legs apart a little bit. They peg together. And then fold down the gray part in the cockpit, the cab, and fold down the rest of the way, and plug that into the top of the shoulders, and turn the head around, and pop the cab connector peg into the hole on the back. And that should be it. Yep. The colors don't really change here. There's a little bit of extra painted silver, but that's about it. Oh, hey, forgot to mention his orange lights. And the neat little stabilizer cylinders hidden inside his fenders. They don't actually touch the ground, I'm not sure why. I've heard some of them do and some don't. So I'm not sure what the deal is with that. Hightower, oh, his pelvis does peg together. I was messing with him last night, and I was thinking that his pelvis didn't peg together, but now I just remembered that it did. I have no idea what relevance this has, except that I was going to mention how the stiff joints help keep his pelvis together in lieu of a peg. Okay. He's got his giant crane rifle, which is almost as tall as he is. In fact, it might be as tall as him. I'm not sure. Can't get it. Probably is about as tall as he is there. But neat thing is, inside his cab, the whole cab flips up, and you can get a little gun out of it. Of course, it usually falls out, so make sure you're holding over something colored light. Because I almost lost this gun twice when it fell into the dark floor. You know, he's got this little completely unnecessary pistol weapon, which I like details like that. I kind of like Sideburn's little silver gun knife thing. Hightower can get a couple of two-handed poses with his giant rifle. Though they're both kind of funny looking. Because the barrel of the gun usually winds up pointing higher than the grip of the gun. So it really is weird looking. It's more of a just carrying the gun around than a combat pose. The shoulders aren't quite as stiff as the other joints on his body, which means the gun's gonna sag down a little bit. And if he's doing the two-handed gun holding, there's nowhere to put his little pistol except back in his cab. Which is kind of a shame. He needs a little place to mount the gun. Okay. Hightower has, 12. He's got 13 points of articulation, including two joints each in his toes, which is neat. Of course, that's for the claws in his landfill arm mode. But it's pretty helpful here. He can crouch down and stuff. Well, the idea is that he can crouch down and stuff. Having a little trouble doing that right now. Oh, man, these are stiff joints. What is the deal with this? Okay, there we go. He's kind of crouched there. It's just really neat how much dynamic posing you can get out of two joints in the feet. He's got 15 points of articulation because his wrists are in hinges. Alright, so he's like 5 inches tall. Let me double check that here. Kind of having to estimate some of the height because I got him. Now his leg is stuck. There we go. Yeah. He's, 5 inches tall. Wow, how would I ever guess? He's a lot bigger looking than, like, Sideburn or X-Brawn are in robot mode. But, like, his shoulders and stuff, which is where a lot of his bulk is, they're almost completely hollow. So it's all an illusion. One thing I do like about the build team in general is their expressive faces. All except Hightower, who's got the, well, okay, I guess it's not so normal anymore. He's just got a neutralish expression. Anyway, Hightower's a good toy. I'm not sure if he's $10 worth on his own, but for the combiner factor, he's probably worth the money. I'm going to give Hightower a 7 out of 10 on his own here. He's a good enough toy. You know, he'll work outside of just being a piece of landfill. In fact, in landfill's case, all the components look to be better than their combined form. So, Hightower gets 7 out of 10, and maybe I'll be back next week. I'm not sure. This is Goldimus Prime.
Decepticons! Jets that transform into dangerous robots! But first, they'll have to battle the heroic Autobots! There! Transformers Generation 2. Autobot cars and Decepticon jets each sold separately.
You know, I had a very nice rant on Transformers Armada, the supposed next installment of the Transformers saga, but some of the information was within that rant is now outdated. Most of it basically revolved around the AllSpark, and that was one of the major places that I was discussing. And guess what? The AllSpark fell apart. The AllSpark is where our message board is from the Pax Cybertronian Alliance. I don't know how long that will last, but as of right now, the ownership of the AllSpark has changed hands. Some say that it's been hijacked, and really I'm not trying to pick sides here, but it's pretty clear-cut that the new owners of the AllSpark are trying to pull a bot talk from, you know, for those of you who don't know, bot talk is sort of oppressive in the way it handles its users, people who post there. If you say something that they disagree with, you're banned. Or at the very least, your post is deleted. And that's now happening at the AllSpark. The old motto, "We are one," doesn't exactly seem quite so true anymore. You know, I was starting to take a shining to the AllSpark. I've never really disliked it, and I'm very appreciative of the message board. But I've always felt that that web boards really weren't mature enough, and that basically, in a way, it's inferior to Usenet, and my opinion had changed on that recently, because really AllSpark is as enjoyable as AllToys Transformers is, and in my estimation anyway, but now I really don't know. Usenet groups can be taken over, not as easily as web boards. All you need for a web board like this is a password. He who owns the password rules the world, and that's just how it is. The AllSpark, as far as I'm concerned, has moved. Information soon will be at theallspark.com, but that's not happened yet. The new board is hosted there. It's an Icono board, and hopefully you can find a link on the old AllSpark before it gets deleted, and I'll post a link on the Radio Free Cybertron homepage. Hopefully this won't last. Hopefully this will basically blow over, and an agreement hopefully will be worked out, but, you know, who knows. I'd hate to see the AllSpark fall because of the exact same problem that spawned its creation. For those of you who don't know, the AllSpark was formed by several trans fans who were tired of being oppressed at bot talk. It's just a shame. Hopefully, though, it'll all be worked out. I don't really see the current ownership of AllSpark lasting very long. But who knows? Bot talk has been around forever, hasn't it?
You are listening to Radio Free Cybertron. The first, the best, the Optimus Prime, if you will.
Hello, and I am ATT's Dual Maxwell, here to give you a review of Yamato's new VF-1A, the Karotai variable fighter from the movie Macross, Do You Remember Love? Some of you might be familiar with the design, as the VF-1S with fast-pack armor became what Transformers fans have all come to know and love as Jetfire. Some of you might be interested in knowing that Bandai plans on releasing an armorless VF-1J for about $55 this winter, which is the Jetfire toy with a different head. Obviously, the toy I'm reviewing has the benefit of almost 20 years in toy design advances, the fact it was made for collectors, and was approved by the creator of the Valkyrie variable fighter, Shoji Kawamori. This toy is not officially available in the USA, thanks to Harmony Gold, who plans on releasing their own Valkyrie toys in the near future as the Robotech.com store exclusive, most to much Macross fans' dismay. The toy I am reviewing can be bought from Hobby Link Japan, eBay, and other sites for around $70 to $80, including shipping, with a Japanese MSRP of 7,800 yen. Note there is also a Toys R Us exclusive VF-1A in Japan only, obviously, that's in a very nice brown cannon fodder paint scheme for those of you who like rare variants you have to pay far too much for. With all that out of the way, let's get to the review. The toy itself comes in a very nice and big window box packaged in fighter mode with its gun pod and both sets of missiles in full display. Taken out of the box, you get to see the extra set of hands, heat shield, antennae, sticker sheet, instruction manual, and registration card. Compared to the VF-19A and most Hasbro toys, taking the fighter and weapons out of the box is a snap. You take the box, take it out of the box, you take the top tray off, bend the bottom tray a little, and slide out your 9.5-inch long white fighter with black and red trim and all of its weapons and accessories. The sticker sheet contains stickers for both this toy and the upcoming Max Ginus and Roy Fokker versions. The stickers do require some trimming to look good when put on the toy, and you have to figure out most of them on your own, as the instructions don't tell you about most of them. They tell you about the major stickers, but most of the minor stickers, like no step or what have you, you gotta figure out yourself. The toy in fighter mode is a gorgeous looking airplane with retractable landing gear and a see-through canopy. Articulation is minimal in this mode as it's an airplane. Duh. The missile pods can be put in underneath the wings and they seem to fit okay, but there have been reports that the small missile types only fit in the outside connectors and don't really slide into the inner ones. I have mine with the larger box missiles inside and a set of smalls outside, as opposed to all four of one type. It looks better, and I've got no desire to check out the other way. It just looks good that way. The wings can sweep forward or back, similar to an F-14 Tomcat fighter, which this toy strongly resembles. You can also, by removing two bits from the arms, which are hidden in fighter mode, put the gun pod in it so it's stored underneath the fighter like it's supposed to be. But it really touches the ground, so you may or may not want to have the gun installed in this mode. It looks good, but depending on how you've got your display cabinet set up, it might look like it's only resting on its back wheels. It's could have used about a quarter inch extra ground room on the bottom for the gun, which it does not have. Overall, I have to give fighter mode an 8.8. Okay, now we go to Gerwalk mode and transformation. To get to Gerwalk mode, you need to press the bubbles on each side of both intakes backwards, slide the rear hook off the back of the leg, and take it off the arm pegs. Then the arms can be pulled out and posed, fist extended, legs reattached at only the intake button point, stabilizers folded up, stabilizer section folded up over rear of the plane, and gun hands can be switched out for a nicer fitting trigger finger gun hand for your gun pod with the expense of having no visible thumb. Gerwalk mode is nice, but the light connection is a little flimsy on its own, which limits the poses you can stand it in. It looks alright in this mode, and it does have an impressive 20 or so points of articulation. If the legs were more stable, this mode would be excellent. As it stands, I give a Gerwalk mode 7.5. Now for the Batroid mode. Batroid mode is pretty similar to Robots in Disguise Ultra Magnus, as it involves some serious removal and reattaching of parts. The legs get removed from the body altogether, a part is taken out of the nose guns, and both legs are slid into this hole, one on each side. The canopy is removed and a red heat shield takes its place. You then remove the missiles if they were in place under the wings, unless you want to leave the wings out and do sort of a flying robot mode, which I think looks kind of stupid, but some people like it that way. Otherwise, the wings are folded back. You now press down on the middle front of the plane, which takes it connecting off from the cockpit. You slide it down till it becomes the chest and takes over part of the heat shield. It slides flush to it. You move a section in the rear plane upwards, which might take the rear stabilizer section and unfold it for a moment. Turn the head around, fold it up, take the whole back section, fold it down, closing the opening that let the head in. Move a small double tab on the inside back up, which will connect it to the rear of the cockpit. Slide the arm connectors into holders that are inside the chest, which you might have to work a little bit to get in, because it gets a real tight fit. And then you can pretty much pose it as desired. In Batroid mode, it's got a massive 24 points of articulation, allowing a large number of poses. You lose a little bit of mobility in the arms and legs as they can run into other parts, being the chest and the back/wings. But it can do just about any normal pose you can think of, which is aided in stability because the legs are made of die-cast metal. It stands about 8-9 inches tall. Batroid mode looks good, and it can seriously outpose Jetfire any day while beating it in the looks department, even though it's a smaller toy. I give Batroid mode 8.4. Overall, the toy gets an 8.4, with 9 being perfect, 10 being mind-blowing, 7 is okay, and anything under 6.5 is increasingly bad. I would like to note the toy is for adult collectors, and really isn't a happy, fun-time play toy, but to an lesser degree than the Yamato Macross Plus toys. These toys are basically for collectors to display, pose every now and again. They're not meant to be banged into each other or dropped off cliffs or anything. And it shows. But if you want accuracy, it's about as accurate as you can get without buying an overpriced model kit that takes hours to build and requires painting skills most of us don't have. This is Duo Maxwell signing off, and thanks to listening to what might but be the first of many non-Transformer reviews.
Megatron must be stopped, no matter the cost.
Radio Free Cybertron, off the cuff entertainment. Oh boy, right now I am attempting to review Cybertronian, the unofficial Transformers Recognition Guide, Volumes 2 and 3. I was unable to review Volume number 2 in time because of some family issues. But I decided, because Doug sort of mentioned this on Alt Toys Transformers, I decided that I really should do this because, you know, I love Doug. He's my favorite person ever. And Harold, too, even though I've never met Harold. And as far as I know, I've never spoken with Harold, but I love you too, Harold. I love you all. But, Cybertronian Volume 2. It covers the third series of the Transformers. Most notably are the later Scramble City combiners. No, not the later. The middle combiners, I'll say. Which is Defensor, Superion. Minasaur and Bruticus. It also covers the Predacons and what I'll basically refer to as the movie characters, except for RC, who never got an official toy in the United States and never got one in Japan either. She got a model, as far as I know. Just like Volume 1, the layout is very nice. The pictures are beautiful. The paper stock is, this time it's the glossy paper. Best I recall, this is made from clay, if I remember my elementary school ecology right. This stuff doesn't recycle well, or at least circa 1987, when I actually learned that factoid. But, you know, just like the other Cybertronian, the pictures are very nice. And if you don't actually own the toys and you don't want to spend the money on them, it's a very nice substitute. And that's one of my main points, because I'm poor, got no money. And this is like the absolute worst hobby for someone with no money. You know, like this and day trading. You know, you basically flush your money down the, basically, as far as I remember, there are only two other guides, unofficial guides, released in the United States. And that is the Galvatron.com guide, which I did not purchase. Like I said, I'm poor. The Alvarez books. And, well, I can't compare it to the Galvatron.com book, which is the transmanual. And really, I can't fairly compare it to the Alvarez books either. I can say that, from what I've seen, I do think it's the most attractive. The most attractive of the Transformers guides. The layout is very nice. The information given for each toy, I'd say it's a pretty good balance. You can't write an encyclopedia entry for each toy with a detailed analysis. You can't really do that. You could, but it would tend to get boring because there's not a lot of diversity, or enough diversity that would make it interesting. You really can't go into detail about how each toy transforms because it's boring. It is. While part of me would like to see more information on each toy, the small, logical, and reasonable part of me says, what is there to tell? Without fabricating information on the toys, you really can't make it interesting. Sure, you know, it could say that Metroplex was designed in 1837 by a Mexican bandit who claimed to be abducted by aliens, and the aliens inserted the design into his brain. And while that might be interesting and funny, it's not true. Basically, there is not much detail per toy that this guide doesn't cover. It's thorough in that sense. The pictures are, like I say, very nice, and most everything is covered that you would expect. It's like here in number 2. You see how Ultra Magnus is formed from the car carrier, and how it combines with the tractor to form the full-size robot. You know, that's, you expect to see that. And it's there. I really can't think of any instance where it comes short in pictures. You know, there's some slight nitpicking online about how a sticker here or there may be misplaced, and how one toy may have the factory stickers only. Big deal. You know, sometimes you'll see a typographical error. Really, where don't you? And this basically holds true for both issues, numbers 2 and 3. Number 2 goes into an overview, a pretty thorough overview, to be honest, of Transformers the movie. It includes pictures of the Unicron prototypes, pictures of the different versions of the movie, the soundtrack, the voice actors, and to be honest, it's more thorough than the movie even deserves. So, you know, I like that. My only problem with that is that the voice actors page, while it's actually nice to see that, and to see how the voice actors look, and, you know, that's a nice novelty, I don't really know if that's necessary. But, you know, this is the longest of the guides, and it's the same price. I'm not going to complain. As far as the reviews of the media go, the comic reviews and the episode reviews, it seems that one review has been taken off per page from the first volume, so basically there is more room for each review, and I applaud that. The first volume was sort of difficult to read. This is not. It's very nice, and I like that. And that holds true for Cybertronian 3 as well. The foreword by Doug Glenn is always good reading. Same thing, you know, for both volumes. The information is nice. The little narrative of how the line came to be, that's interesting. And I like that. The obligatory web directory, or the listing of fan sites and official sites, is there. And while more sites could be listed per issue, it's good that they go into detail. Too much information can be detrimental to what you're trying to get across, and the web listing is, you know, nice and concise, and it's a good varied assortment of websites, including Radio Free Cybertron. If I might make a suggestion, coldhardslag.com would be a good addition, as would transfandom.com. Other than the specific content, the same holds true for number 3. It has a nice cover on the front of Fortress Maximus, and the back is a beautiful CGI center twin done by Trent Troop, and we all love Trent. And I hope he does something for the fourth Cybertronian. And I didn't mention this, but number 2 has a cover, painted cover of Optimus Prime on the front, and a really spiffy picture of the Sharktacons on the back. And we all love Gnaw. He's like the coolest Transformer ever. Content specific to number 3 includes the fourth series of Transformers, including, you know, things like the Throttlebots, the Technobots, the Clones, the Target Masters, and the Headmasters, Fortress Maximus, Scorponok, the Terracons, etc. There's really nothing to expand on from the second issue. All the same, the pictures are nice. The information is concise. Not too much, not too little. Volume 2 covered Transformers the movie, and Volume 3 does a very good job of covering some of the memorabilia from the time. Not everything is included, of course, because, you know, back at this time the Transformers were still huge, even though on television it was sort of fading. But the toys still sold very well. Examples of things included in the memorabilia guide is the Hard Hero bust of Optimus Prime, which that's actually new. The HO scale model train set, which that's just wild. Those darned Transformers collector's cases, which you can get on eBay for $5, which I've seen those for $5. I don't know if they still go for that. I never cared for those much myself. I just had a big cardboard box that I threw my toys in, and I still do. Also, the AM radio, the Viewmaster set, the lunchbox, you know, a lot of stuff that you might remember from your childhood, or if you're like me, some things that you missed, like the train set. Just like the other volumes, there is a checklist included. And while personally, you know, a checklist doesn't interest me that much, I know that it does for certain people, because they like keeping track of things like this. To finish off this insane rambling of mine, I really have to be objective. Cybertronian only has one problem, and that goes back to Volume 1, and that's the price, $25 per issue. Now, if you go to a comic shop, there's a good chance you'll get a discount. I do. I get 21% off of all my purchases, so Cybertronian only cost me 6% of that is tax. So Cybertronian only costs me, $21.25 American. You know, that's not bad. For what you get, in my opinion, it really is worth $25. For what you get, a 96-page full-color guide with lots of information, lots of pretty pictures. It sure beats paying $300-$400 for a sealed prowl. Of course, you can get a sealed Spanish prowl for about $150, but as far as this hobby goes, and especially considering Generation 1, there's not much you're going to get for $25. So if Generation 1 is your main interest, or if it's an interest at all, $25 isn't a whole lot in this hobby.
Radio Free Cybertron.
Ahoy, listeners! Lesser-known Transmon Chris McFeely here with a review of the bootleg Ruination toy. Ruination, as everyone must know by now, is the gestalt form of the Commandos, the robots in disguise repaints of the original G1 Combaticon toys. I myself have never owned the original Combaticons, and won't be getting my hands on the official Commando toys anytime soon, so I personally can't compare them to each other in any huge amount of detail, beyond little facts that I've picked up here and there. I'll start with Mega Octane, known as Dorailer in Japan, the Commando leader and a repaint of Onslaught. As I understand, the official Mega Octane toy will be released at the deluxe price point. But I'm wondering how they're going to fit a vehicle mode of this size onto a deluxe card and have him equipped with all his accessories. Personally though, I would buy him if he was any more expensive than the normal deluxe. Mega Octane is decked out in a jungle camel color scheme, which is more effective than Onslaught's original blue and green colors, but the neon orange cannon must be something of a giveaway on secretive jungle missions. The cannon itself has an extra hole in the top, which makes it capable of holding Mega Octane's rifle when he is in vehicle mode, or holding the ramp for his defense-based mode when the team is combined with Ruination. For the defense-based mode, the cannon also has an extra added tab that fits into a slot in the back of Mega Octane's head, which makes it much more steady than the original Onslaught. Some of the holes in Mega Octane's body seem to have been poorly drilled, however, and are not big enough for the pegs that go into them. I regrettably snapped one of the pegs off of his cannon while trying to remove it was stuck in so tightly. Also, the combination joint in his left leg has problems, but I'll get to that later. Next, let's look at Rollbar, known as Grijipar in Japan, the repaint of Swindle. Rollbar, like the other smaller Commandos, is to be sold at the basic price point. He comes with his familiar set of two guns, although on my bootleg, the plastic of the handle of the smaller gun has warped and bent a little. I don't know if that's common with all the bootlegs. Rollbar is a dark green color, as opposed to Swindle's old dull orange paint job, and his transformation is simple. But I would have to say that he's my favorite out of all of these bootlegs, as I can't really find any fault with him. No broken joints, no poorly drilled holes, and all his parts are used in both his modes. Thirdly, we move on to Armorhide, aka Dangar in Japan, the Brawl repaint. In contrast to his other ground-based commando partners, Armorhide is painted in cream and brown colors, apparently designed for the desert, more so than the jungle, like Mega Octane and Rollbar. He comes with his familiar weapons, his double-barreled cannon and his smaller handheld gun. In tank mode, his turret has an additional hole drilled in the top of it, so that his smaller gun can be fitted in while he is in tank mode, a feature not in the original Brawl toy, although it goes some way to helping him resemble Brawl's old cartoon design. This extra hole, as far as I know, is also not in the official toy, and is a welcome addition to this bootleg. In robot mode, as with the original Brawl toy, the double-barreled cannon doesn't fit anywhere, and this is slightly annoying to me, as it's the only weapon of any of the Commandos, at least in this bootleg set, that must be set aside. Also, I find that his knee joints are somewhat loose. Now we come to Rotor, Heptor in Japan, the Vortex repaint. Colored dark blue with red, white, and orange portions in robot mode, this bootleg Rotor comes with his smaller weapon, but does not come with his larger twin cannons. The official toy will be equipped with them as far as I know. His blades are also collapsible, a feature not in the original Vortex toy or the official Rotor toy. In robot mode, I find that Rotor, at least my Rotor, has very loose shoulder ball joints. When pulling on his arms during transformation, I'm constantly afraid they're going to snap off. His colors are somewhat ugly as well, and I would have to consider him my least favorite on the team. Finally, there is Movor, Shuttler in Japan, the blast-off repaint. I had been pronouncing his name Mavor until the show proved that it was actually pronounced Movor. This bootleg Movor comes with no weapons at all, although I understand that the package art makes it appear that Robar's smaller gun belongs to him. I didn't get any packaging with mine, so I don't know for sure. The official Movor toy will come with a small gun and twin cannons, although there does not appear to be a place for his small gun to go in shuttle mode, even on this modified bootleg. However, I won't quibble over that right now, as this is a review of the bootleg and not of the real thing. Movor, like Rotor, has particularly loose shoulder ball joints, but due to his arm's unusual shape, they're a bit more stable than Rotor's. I like Movor a lot more than I should, probably due in part to the fact that his voice in the cartoon is provided by Robert Axelrod, one of my favorite voice actors, who you might have heard as Finster and Lord Zedd in Power Rangers, and Wizardmon Armadillomon and a couple more over in Digimon. Ruination, known as Baldigus or Baldigus in Japan, is the combined form of the Commandos. Mega Octane is the torso, while typically Rotor and Movor form the arms, while Armorhide and Robar form the legs. But these four are all interchangeable, and the RID cartoon has shown them in different configurations at times, marking the first example of Gestalt doing this in the cartoon, the way their toys were originally designed to. The Ruination bootleg is fine down his right side. Movor and Robar fit into place perfectly with no problems. Down his left, however, Ruination has a few problems. Firstly, Rotor's rear wheel tends to impede his proper insertion into the link joint there. You don't have to push the arm in the whole way, but then it might fall out. And you can extend Rotor's arms what little distance they go, and this locks it in fine, but then you can't rotate his arm around. The bigger problem, though, is with the connection joint in Mega Octane's left leg. I have heard that most people have to put Armorhide on sideways just because they can't fit his head into the joint any other way. I had to do this too at first, until I just employed what official instructions would call unnecessary force, and rammed him in and ripped him out the right way around. He now fits in and out fine, and the joint is still intact. Of course, if you wanted to be pacifistic about it, you could use a screwdriver to loosen the two halves of Mega Octane's leg a little. Ruination also has some differences from Bruticus. For one, in this toy, Armorhide points forward, with his turret on his back extended and with the barrel pointing down, while on Bruticus, Brawl had the turret at the front, pointing up. In the interests of minimizing leftover pieces, as a part of Ruination's design, all of the Commando's weapons can now be combined into two super weapons for Ruination to hold. For the first weapon, you combine Rollbar's two guns together, then fit the hole of Rotor's small gun over the peg on the opposite side of the larger gun. Then you attach Armorhide's double cannon to the top of Rollbar's larger gun, via the hole drilled in between the two barrels. For the second gun, you insert Armorhide's small pistol into one of the holes in the side of Mega Octane's rifle, and that's as far as you can go with the bootleg, as no other weapons were included. But for the actual toy, you then insert Movor's small gun into the other side of Mega Octane's rifle, then attach Rotor's twin cannons to the pegs on Rotor's arms, and put Movor's twin cannons on his wings. Ruination certainly packs a lot more heat than Bruticus. Also, there are two more things you can do to see to it that you have no leftover pieces in Ruination mode. First is the one everyone knows. You can insert Mega Octane's defense-based mode ramp into the peg in his cannons so that it's held against Ruination's back. And secondly, there's one extra trick that I've learned that I haven't heard anyone else mention before. You can store Mega Octane's own chest plate by inserting the peg on it into the hole in Rollbar's back. Voila! Ruination complete with no leftover parts. For overall comments, the most notable fact about these toys is the sheer quality of the plastic involved. It's practically as good as the real thing. This is the first bootleg that I've ever actually bought, and to be honest, I couldn't really tell the difference between this and an official toy. Paint jobs tend to be poor in some places, especially on the small robot faces. But when dealing with a bootleg of this quality, it's something that you can certainly overlook. Another little thing is that instead of Decepticon symbols, these bootlegs all have American military stars on them. You could always cover them up with some repro labels if you wanted. I appear to have been lucky in that I got a bootleg that was in no way damaged. I picked mine up at Transforce 2001, and a friend who bought his at the same time found that his Rotor had one of his arms broken off. I've heard other people say they've had similar occurrences. But I'll be blunt. If you see this toy, buy it! I've heard several people say they got it for $5, but that's the common American price. You can't afford to pass it up. Bootleg Ruination gets a solid recommendation from me. Pretty impressive for a guy who gets his power from coffee milk. For Radio Free Cybertron, this is Chris McFeely, signing off.
Radio Free Cybertron!
And that's Radio Free Cybertron. Tune back on the 25th or so for the RSC Anniversary Show.
Sylvester is a big black cat who works hard all day long, who tried to catch this Tweety bird by singing him a song. But safe inside my gilded cage, I just sit and swing, joining with the pretty cat when he tries to sing.
Oh, come on out.
But I'm safe in here.
Please come on out.
I've nothing to fear.
Oh, come on out.
Except when you're near.
Won't ever.
No one ever gets together with you.
I'm so alone.
That's just too bad.
I'm so alone.
You sound so sad.
I'm so alone.
Now you're dead and mad.
Won't ever.
No one ever
get together with
you.
Me. We could be together and in winter go down south.
I don't think I would see much, 'cause I'd be inside your mouth.
Oh, I'll be good.
Your great big eyes.
Yes, I'll be good.
Your great big wise.
Oh, I'll be good.
Hit on someone your size.
Won't ever.
No one ever
gets together with
me.
Come on
out with a booty cat.
Say, come on out.
I'm not going out with a booty cat.
Please,
you heard
come on
what
out.
I said, and that is that.
Won't you ever,
no one ever
get together with
you.
Me? I'm so
if
alone.
If it's up to me, you'll stay that way.
I'm so
booty
alone.
Booty cat, will you please go away?
I'm so
you'll
alone.
You'll be quiet, begging, sweet all day.
Won't you ever,
no one ever
get together with me? We could be so happy if you'd have me for a friend.
You must think that I'm sappy, 'cause that you'll be my end.
Oh, suckersash, I'll be so
you're
good.
Just a hip a twit.
I'll
I know
be so
you're
good.
Skipping quite a bit.
I'll
so
be
it's
so
just
good.
In this little skit.
Won't you ever?
No one ever gets
together
with
me.
You.
Won't you ever?
No one ever.
Won't you ever?
No one ever.
Won't you ever?
No one ever.
Won't you ever?
Never ever.
Will I ever?
No one ever
get together with you.